Chapter 39, The Ascension Era. Jesus showed the way as the masculine idea of principle. Then woman took it up at that point, the ascending thought in the scale, and is showing the way, thus representing the male and female principle, the male and female of God's creating. Mary Baker Eddy, 1907. Five outstanding men were employed as counsel for Mrs. Eddy, Christian Science, and the 10 men named as defendants. Foremost among these five was Mrs. Eddy's attorney, General Frank S. Streeter, of whom Michael Meehan wrote, "As a lawyer, Mr. Streeter is in a class by himself in New Hampshire. He embodies much of that robust spirit in some way attributed to the past. He is big physically and mentally, and he is big of heart. He knows the law and the rights of the citizen under the law, and having taken a stand, he has the courage to maintain it, even though he stand alone. He fights in the open, and with recognized rightful weapons. Mr. Streeter represents the best in New England legal practice, and when he talks, he has the undivided attention of the court he addresses. His presence is commanding, his voice full, his perception quick, his understanding clear, his grasp of his subject firm. He can sit in silence under castigation and wait with patience his opportunity to hit back. He is imperturbable, and it is this imperturbability, coupled with his knowledge of every detail of his case, that makes him so formidable an opponent." Mr. Streeter and his partner, Alan Hollis, were representing Mrs. Eddy. Edwin G. Eastman was engaged to represent the New Hampshire defendants. Samuel J. Elder and William H. Morse of Boston were representing the Massachusetts defendants, as well as Edward A. Kimball of Chicago. The first step Mrs. Eddy's attorneys took in this case was to prepare a petition for the substitution of her trustees in place of the, quote, next friends, end quote, as plaintiff. On March 22nd, the leader wrote to William D. McCracken, first reader of the Mother Church, informing him that she had appointed trustees to take care of her property for her. McCracken asked permission to read the letter, Miscellany, page 135, at a Wednesday evening meeting, which permission was granted, and the proceedings were reported in the Concord Monitor. A card, Miscellany, page 136, on the same subject, was published in the Concord Daily Patriot. Though no court proceedings had begun in March, the newspapers continued nearly every day with front-page articles against Mrs. Eddy, and McClure's April issue came out with pages of history of Mrs. Eddy's early years of teaching Christian Science, as told by Mary Crafts and others of that ilk. One of the many falsehoods in this issue of McClure's was Mary Crafts' assertion that Mrs. Eddy did not heal. On March 12th, the leader said to her household students, "Do you believe what the book says about chemicalization, that, quote, the higher truth lifts her voice, the louder will error scream?" End quote. "I was just thinking how I am being abused," Glover case and newspaper articles, "and I could feel the tears starting to come. When suddenly I thought of two cases of healing I had, and then joy took the place of sorrow." She then told them of two hopeless cripples she had healed. one across from the Allens' house in Lynn, and the other at Mrs. Slade's residence in Chelsea, both immediate healings. When she finished, she said, quote, "The papers are writing up my history, the history of my ancestry, writing lies. My history is a holy one." Quote, "In writing my history, they can say nothing against me, so they begin to tell lies. It will do the same to you. Your truth produces the chemical until all is worked out." End quote. On March 16th, the leader said to her students, "This hour is the acme of hate against love, and love alone can meet it. God demands God. Truth destroys error." The leader was rising daily to meet this hour of the acme of hate against love. And we are fortunate indeed to have some of the lessons she gave to her students at that time. The field, too, felt the leader's ascending thought, as is evident in this letter from Atlanta, Georgia, which the leader received in mid-March. "Beloved leader and teacher, Sunday morning I had such an uplifted sense of the splendor of your present position, of the moral courage that inspires and sustains you, that it gave me the very baptismal of spirit. I saw how it paled all other heroism in standing for human rights. I saw you on the rock, the spiritual sense of man as the Son of God, and for that divine inheritance you are holding aloft the banner of life, harmony, and immortality. Below you were the important seeming forces of the loosened occultism of the human mind that has ever tried to drown the spiritual idea. But, quote, the Lord on high is mightier than the noise of many waters, yea, than the mighty waves of the sea," end quote. "About you was the cloud of witnesses, chanting hymns of praise and gratitude for blessings received. Around encamped the heavenly hosts, the angels of his presence. Arching the radiance above you was the rainbow of promise, speedy deliverance from the seeming powers of evil. I beheld," quote, "the lion of the tribe of Judah," end quote, "the moral courage that stands high and firm for the spiritual freedom and divine heritage of man. I saw as never before the woman and the earth helping the woman. This seems to me the most marvelous hour of history. God is with you, and our grateful and loving hearts bless you every moment. In tenderest love, your devoted student, Sue Mims." A little later in March, the leader received a letter from William Lloyd in Colorado Springs, part of which said, "I am only a plain middle-aged businessman, but I owe literally all I have and am, spiritually and materially, to your teachings. May I say, I know you are entirely competent, never so competent. I know this because of the present uproar all over these United States. Had you stood still during the past year, error would be satisfied and silent. You must have reached heights unknown to us that this seeming turmoil seeks to overwhelm. You have God about you, and hundreds of thousands of loyal followers at your side, undismayed, of whom I humbly and gratefully subscribe myself, 1. It was true that the leader had, quote, reached heights unknown to, end quote, her followers, and she was continuing to do so daily. She was also giving some of the footsteps to her household. On March 17th, she said to them, "We must give up all for Christ, truth. Error cannot get into the kingdom, so we must divest ourselves of it. We must hold with God alone." On March 22nd, she included this in their lesson. Take the side with God and put all of the balance there. This is what is needed. Hold with your leader and with God. Now let us have God without the crucifixion, but resurrected to the living man of God, the spiritualized sense. On March 24th, she told her students, "I have no child. The kingdom of heaven is in our midst. Heaven is harmony, and harmony is peace, love, joy. We must see health and our relations in the spiritual." The belief of a material child was persecuting Mrs. Eddy, but she was far more closely related to her humble, grateful followers. George Glover wanted her money, but many loyal followers truly wanted the spirituality she had to give to them. If the, quote, remnant, end quote, would follow in her footsteps, these faithful followers must learn more about these footsteps now. On March 24th, the leader wrote to Calvin C. Hill, "My beloved student, I beg that you will come to me March 26th or 27th to watch with me 1 or 2 weeks as the case may require. This hour is going to test Christian Scientists and the fate of our cause, and they must not be found wanting. They must forget self and remember only their God and their way-shower and their duty to have one God and love their neighbor as themselves. I see this clearly, that the prosperity of our cause hangs in this balance. May God open your eyes to see this and to come to her who has borne for you the burden in the heat of the day." In a lesson to her household a few days earlier, the leader had said, quote, "All there is of us is what there is of us under the fire of mesmerism, the test," end quote. She knew how severe, quote, the fire of mesmerism, end quote, could be, and how few were ready for this test. And she also knew now that all her followers would have to meet this test without their leader at their side. All needed to learn to unself. A great many were totally absorbed with my work, my church, my reading room, my practice, my lectures, my teaching, my patients, my students, thinking they were doing God's bidding. But when God's chosen one called them to work in his, her vineyard, they were too busy. And so she wrote to Calvin Hill, quote, "May God open your eyes to see this and to come," end quote. Calvin did come, and so did several others that she called, until, according to Calvin Hill, she had 12 students doing special work. Some of those who were there in addition to Calvin Hill, George Kinter and Louis Strang, were H. Cornell Wilson, John Lathrop, and Joseph Mann. On Wednesday, March 27th, the leader told her disciples at Pleasant View. The disciples followed Jesus up to a certain point and then deserted him, and darkness followed. Follow the way shower, and you will follow the divine idea. Turn away from the way shower, and you turn away from the divine idea. Like turning away from the window pane, and you turn away from the light. The way shower was endeavoring to teach her students that in all time to come, if a student turns away from Mary Baker Eddy as the way shower, he is turning away from the light. It is not possible to climb up some other way. Those who think they can are already judged by Jesus' words. Quote, if therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? End quote. On March 29th, the leader's lesson included eating, drinking, sleeping, being clothed are only a human concept. These and the belief of life, substance, and intelligence in matter must all be given up for the immortal. The Christ takes us out of the discord of not eating, sleeping, etc., and gives us the pleasurable side of it, takes us out of the pain and gives us the pleasure, then replaces that with the spiritual. We must come to see we do not depend upon eating, sleeping, etc., for life and health, but depend on mind. Jesus did not make the demonstration over death, but yielded to it because of the desertion of his disciples. If they had stood by him, we should now be in the millennium. That demonstration must be made, or the world will again be left in darkness. The students must hold up the hands of the way-shower. If they do, they shall be able to meet the fire of mesmerism when they are tried. And many were sincerely trying to hold up the way-shower's hands, while the world was displaying a grotesque caricature of the way-shower, and buffeting this misconception unmercifully. These lies were even being translated and spread in Germany. But another interesting development was taking place. A number of churches, reading rooms, and individual scientists were writing about the remarkable increase in interest in Christian Science, the literature, and meetings, because of the undue publicity. McClellan wrote in a letter to Mrs. Eddy, I wish that the growth of interest in Christian Science, which is now so manifest, might have come in some way other than through attacks on you. But the increased interest in your teachings amounts almost to a boom. The Publishing Society is hard-pressed to provide room for all the extra clerks necessary to attend to the wonderful increase in the demand for Christian Science literature. God is making the wrath of man to praise him. A letter from Toledo, Ohio, came from one of Mrs. Eddy's early students. Sarah J. Clark had first studied in Mrs. Eddy's primary class in September 1885, and had been active in the field for a score of years. She told in her letter of the inspiration she had received from the leader's article, quote, Harvest, end quote. Miss Clark began and ended her letter of March 29th as follows. My very dear teacher, by reason of the flagrant falsehoods concerning you in recent publications, many persons have been led to inquire what is the truth about this matter, and are now eagerly reading the revelations of truth in your immortal book. If in any way I can do anything for you, do not forget to call on me. One more disciple was volunteering, was turning to the light, and by June, Sarah J. Clark was with the other workers at Pleasant View. Another reaction to, quote, the flagrant falsehoods, end quote, took place before the end of March. Mrs. Eddy's neighbor, Professor John F. Kent, who had aided Slott, Chandler, and Peabody, changed sides, according to the Boston Evening Record of March 30th. Kent goes over to Mrs. Eddy, says plaintiff used him falsely. Quote, I could not go as far as the enemies of Mrs. Eddy desired that I should. What little information I did give was distorted and magnified. End quote. Finding himself placed in what he considered a false position, Mr. Kent has decided to side henceforth with the defendants. The next day, March 31st, was Easter Sunday, and the leader's lesson that morning was resurrection. We must be resurrected, must put off the old man, and put on the new. You must put on the whole of the new man, the spiritual idea. The resurrection is seeing the real man that was never in matter. That is the way I did the healing. I never saw the material man before me, but the real man, perfect. And this healed instantaneously and no relapse. This is the way Jesus healed. This is the resurrection. On Monday morning, April 1st, George Kinter wrote in a letter to McClellan, I wish that you and every worker in the field of Christian Science, and indeed the whole world, might have such an opportunity as I am now having, namely, a visit to our dear leader's home, in order that you might see as I am seeing, with what equanimity and serene calmness she is passing through what to almost anybody else would be a great and trying ordeal. Whereas she, on this, the very eve of the trial, is as sweetly content to let God rule as if there were nothing to disturb the waters, as in reality there is not. But one needs to be at her side to realize how great is her spiritual understanding, for she literally trusts God, and this is the secret of her wonderful career. We shall all appreciate her better, quote, when these clouds have rolled away, end quote, and the scenes now being enacted will serve to send Christianity farther along the way. As Christians of the present epoch, note how good a God our God is by their observation of a remarkable instance of entire reliance upon his goodness to his children. A signal feature of the hour is that she has no word of hate or unkindness for those among the people who would do her injustice, but is demonstrating what she teaches and has ever taught, namely, that love alone overcomes evil with good, that hate, revenge, or malice have no place in Christian Science. This home is as quiet and as lacking in any sort of excitement as a church service.